The effectiveness of this improved access to roads really depends on the availability to capitalize on these market opportunities.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. On Vox Dev Talks, we've talked about the impact of building rural roads, and we've also examined how to make small farms more productive. But what if we did both at the same time? Masai Gebreselassie of Amherst College has been looking at the policies in isolation and also together in Ethiopia. And he joins me now. Welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thank you, Tim.
The villages in Ethiopia that make the data in your paper, what sort of farmers and crops are we talking about? And what about those access roads? How well connected are they before we get to any interventions?
Yeah, so Ethiopia is predominantly an agriculture-based economy. Over 80% of the population lives in rural areas. And most of the farmers are smallholder farmers with an average land size of about 1.5 hectares. And they count over for 90% of the cultivated area. And in terms of their connectivity at baseline, most of these communities were initially really isolated. They may have a dry weather road or trails, in some cases no roads at all, but often they face challenges having access to these roads, particularly during the rainy season. Mm. The program stepped in as a way of kind of trying to alleviate this problem.
We have Ethiopia's Agricultural Extension Program. That's very well established, isn't it? How old is it? What does it provide for farmers?
Yeah, so extension in Ethiopia dates back to the 1950s. Mm. Its nature has changed a lot since then. In the original conception of the program, it really focused on high potential areas in specific parts of the country, typically close to research centers. Mm-hmm. And the program has evolved a lot since 1953. The recent wave, starting in 1995, the government had made agriculture the center of its development strategy, and the expansion of extension services was a key component of improving agricultural productivity within Ethiopia.
At the Agriculture Extension Program, who actually delivers it in the villages? How does that work?
Starting around 2004, the government had the objective to provide every village with three extension agents, also called development agents. The plan was to provide every village with a farmer training center equipped with three extension agents. And these agents typically have either a college degree or a diploma, and they have specialization either in crop production or livestock or management of natural resources. Typically, when we think of extension, we think of the transfer of knowledge. In the Ethiopian context, it includes not just the transfer of knowledge. Mm. They're also tasked with facilitating access to modern inputs to the farmers.
Okay, yes.
In Ethiopia, the government is the main provider of inputs, modern inputs in particular, as well as credit, particularly in these rural communities. So this extension agents or development agents play a key role, not just in transferring modern know-how on best farming practices, but they're also facilitating farmers' access to chemical fertilizers, improved seeds, and they also play a role in administering credit and tax collection. So it really is a package program. But it does vary from location to location. In some places, it's just information delivery. In other locations, it includes a lot more than just transfer of information.
The other half of our story is, let me read this correctly, the Universal Rural Road Program. I can imagine what that does by the name, but who decides where the roads are built and how they're built?
The Universal Rural Road Access Program, which was commenced in 2010, had the objective to connect every village in Ethiopia with an all-weather road. Mm-hmm. And the program is decentralized by design. Ethiopia has a federal system, and the country is divided into regions, and regions are divided into zones and districts. And the program is similarly decentralized. So typically districts, which are kind of one level above village level, are tasked with identifying potential road projects. And then the regional authorities are tasked with doing feasibility studies and evaluating the potential of these roads. And then they're also determine they approve these projects or essentially delay these projects based on budget constraints and a bunch of other criteria that they take into account.
So your task here is to evaluate the impact of these policies. But what are you measuring as an impact? Where do you get the data to find out what that impact is?
Yeah, the key outcome in this paper is productivity. I'm interested in the extent to which access to markets facilitated by this massive railroad construction program.
Mm-hmm.
And then similar access to increased access to technologies facilitated by this extension programs affect productivity. And then importantly, to see whether there are relevant or important interactions between these two factors. So to look at this, I compile various data sources. I compile data on the rural road network from the Ethiopian Road Authority. And then I complement that with data on agricultural outcomes using the annual agricultural sample survey that's conducted by the Central Statistical Agency. I also use additional surveys to look at household level outcomes. But the key outcomes are essentially productivity and then measures of adoption of modern inputs as a way to look at the potential mechanisms that explain the key findings.
So individually, in isolation, what is the impact of each of these policies?
So to start with, on average, I do find that access to roads improve productivity. And I use three alternative measures of productivity, total production value per hectare. I also look at value added per hectare, which takes into account for the cost of inputs. And I also use a third alternative, which is total factor productivity. Across the three measures, I do find that on average, access to a road improves productivity. But when you kind of dig into it, what I find is that the places that gain or that experience improvements in productivity are the places that have access to both the road and extension. Yeah. So in isolation, actually, the places that only have access to a road, they don't experience significant gains in agricultural productivity. And the same goes for the extension program as well. And this is consistent across the three alternative measures of productivity.
So that's interesting, isn't it? Why do you think that agricultural extension, first of all, why is that failing to deliver improvements in productivity?
I do find that access to extension, even in isolation, increases the take-up of modern inputs, such as chemical fertilizers and improved seeds. But I don't find that it's transformative in terms of productivity when it's provided in isolation. And there could be various factors, both on the supply side and demand side. So one is poor connectivity actually hinders the provision of extension services to kind of a broad range of farmers. In fact, in 2010, the government had done a review of the public extension program. And one of the things they've identified was that poor rural infrastructure was hindering the provision of extension, kind of the advisory services provided under extension, as well as the supply of inputs that these farmers need. So on one side, poor connectivity essentially limits the effective access to extension. And in addition, the technologies that are recommended under the extension program, such as adoption of kind of modern inputs, these are potentially risky and potentially expensive undertakings for a lot of farmers. And unless farmers see potential market opportunities where they can take their produce and have profitable opportunities, they may not be as incentivized to adopt these modern practices. And that's essentially what I find, that when you look at the take-up of modern inputs, that's much larger in the places that have extension but are also connected to a road. And so it could be working in both directions, both by kind of making it effective access to extension better, and then also providing potentially profitable market opportunities that incentivize the take-up of these costly modern practices.
But on the other hand, you found that when there was just a road without the agricultural extension, it actually reduced the amount of farming that went on in these villages. Is that right? Why was that?
Yeah, so that finding is consistent with other papers that have found that roads facilitate structural transformation, the shift from agriculture to other sectors of the economy. In my context, what I find is that when you look at villages that have access to both a road and extension program, they actually increase the area they cultivate. They're also more likely to shift into cereal production, which are emphasized or which are the focus of the extension program. And so what you have is essentially there's the places that are connected. So they have a road, but they don't have extension. These places are at a disadvantage since, you know, they're connected, and so they can import crops from other areas, but they don't have the requisite support from the extension program. And so you see these types of reallocation, both in terms of the amount of land they're cultivating as well as their occupations. So they're more likely to shift out of agriculture if they're only connected, but they don't have this extension program. Whereas I find the opposite when you look at places that have both the road and the extension program.
I see. So when they're both delivered together, then the advantage isn't just that it's easier to deliver this extension program and the inputs, but also it's easier to then go and take these crops to market, and there is more confidence in the farmers that this is what they can do. How big is that difference?
What I find is that in the villages that are connected both to the road and extension, as I say, they shift into cultivation of cereals.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't, you know, great data on trade across villages, of course. But what I try to do is in the paper, I try to proxy for patterns of trade by looking at relative production and consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is that in the villages that have both a road and extension, I see that they produce more cereals than they consume.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the reverse holds in the places that only get connected with the road. And so this suggests that there may be patterns of trade in accordance with the patterns of crop choice that we discussed earlier. So the places that are connected and have extension are producing cereals and then potentially selling them to the other locations. And so this would be consistent with the observed patterns of reduction in the cultivated area in the places that only get connected, as well as the other results on lack of improvements in productivity in those locations.
There's probably lots of people listening to this jumping up and down saying, yes, but how do we know that these two programs were delivered randomly and independently of each other? Were you able to test for that?
That's a great question and something that I've tried to work hard to address. To start with, the two programs are implemented by two different government agencies.
Mm-hmm.
There is some overlap in terms of the period in which they're implemented, but the rollout of the extension program started much earlier. But as you would guess, right, the places that have access to extension or that get it connected are indeed potentially different. I find that the places that get extension and that get connected to the road are closer to the existing road network and at baseline. They're also closer to cities. And mm-hmm. of course, these differences do matter. And in the paper, I try to do various things to account for these pre-existing differences. So the main identification strategy is a difference in differences strategy, where I also include village and year fixed effects. So the village fixed effects would account for any time invariant differences that could have a confounding effect. In addition, the underlying identifying assumption in the difference in difference design is that there are no differential trends between the villages that get treated early versus those that get treated later. And I test for this parallel trends assumption by looking at whether the trends across these sets of villages are similar prior to the implementation of the two programs. And I find that that is indeed the case. And I do a bunch of other stuff as well. So I have an instrumental variable strategy where I try to isolate the variation in the road network that is purely due to factors that are exogenous to the villages. And the results are, again, consistent when I implement this instrumental variable strategy. And I identify this a set of correlates, of baseline correlates of extension and road access that we may be concerned about. And then I try to see how the results would change if I allow for differential trends by those characteristics. This essentially allows me to test whether what I'm documenting is being driven by some other factor that is also a correlate of extension or road access. And the results are fairly stable with very demanding specifications that account for these potential concerns. And so, yes, while it's not a randomized controlled trial, what I do in this paper is I exploit the quasi-experimental variation that's induced by these two policies. And what I try to do in the paper is try to account for the potential pre-existing differences to make sure that they're not driving the key findings. And the main findings are robust to these additional controls or additional checks.
And so having gone through all that effort to establish the two government agencies really aren't working together, surely the obvious conclusion is in the future, they should work together. Would that work?
So the key takeaway from my paper is that rural communities face many interdependent constraints and that it may not be sufficient just to relax one of the constraints, right? So
mm-hmm.
what I find is that the effectiveness of this improved access to roads really depends on the availability to capitalize on these market opportunities. And so having extension access concurrently with road access provides farmers with the know-how and the inputs they need to capitalize on new market opportunities. Similarly, if you look at the effect of extension, but as we discussed earlier, its extension on its own may not be transformative. One, because it may be hindered if the transport infrastructure is poor in these communities. And two, having access to markets increases the incentives that farmers have to take up the technologies that are recommended within the extension program. And so the results suggest there are strong complementarities in having access to both road and extension, and that policymakers could leverage the gains from simultaneously implementing these two programs. And of course, the key caveat is that you would have to undertake a cost-effectiveness study since it may be costly to implement two large-scale programs in a similar manner. But at least coordinating the rollout of such programs could improve the effectiveness of each of the programs.
Well, hey, given your results, let's hope that maybe someone does do that because it seems like there's a huge opportunity here. Miss A, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tim.
The paper is called Rural Roads, Agricultural Extension and Productivity. And the author you just heard from him, Bassey Gebreselassie. This has been a Vox Dev Talk, and the best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. And then, of course, you'll get access to all the other episodes, and especially the ones that are talking about rural roads and agricultural extension. All our past episodes as well are at voxdev.org, where you can also find articles about the papers we feature.